Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Berlini, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks for all the feedback. Thanks for all the emails you've been sending. You can send those at fretboardjournal@gmail.com. Let us know if there's somebody you want on this podcast, or if you have a question for Skip Simmons, our resident amp guru for The Truth About Vintage Amps, our new podcast. You can send your questions there as well. We always try to talk to an interesting guitar player or guitar maker on this show, sometimes other fretted instrument makers as well. And today is no exception. Scott over here interviewed Joey Landreth of the Brothers Landreth for you guys. And this was a fun chat. I don't even know where I was, but I do know that while Joey was here, we also got some exceptional video footage of him. And completely unrelated, we also have video footage of his bandmate, Ariel Posen, who also came to the Fretboard Journal. So you can check all of that good stuff out at fretboardjournal.com after you're done listening to this interview. And while you're over there, you may have noticed this. This went live yesterday. Brian Sutton, bless his heart, kind of dared us at the beginning of 2018 with an idea. He wanted to see what would happen if we asked every player who came through the Fretboard Journal to perform a tune that everybody knows, You Are My Sunshine. He thought we would get a lot of amazing different interpretations of it. And we've been asking everybody who's come through, who we think actually is willing to do this dare, if they want to do it. And we've had an amazing, amazing turnout for it. And we just shared our first video with Brian himself playing it. And every week for the next month or two, we are going to be sharing some of these videos that we've captured. We've got Bill Frisell playing You Are My Sunshine. We've got Joe Henry. Noam Pikilny blew us out of the water. David Grisman performed it. We have all of these incredible players giving us their interpretation on that well-loved song. So check all that stuff out at fretboardjournal.com. We've shot about a dozen videos. We're going to be posting them all for Fretboard Journal Insiders, but we're going to be posting a lot of them for free on fretboardjournal.com and our YouTube channel. Speaking of Fretboard Journal Insider, if you don't know about that, that is our new sort of cool kids clubhouse section of our website. You can go to fretboardjournal.com/insider to learn more about that. It's where I get to write about some behind-the-scenes stuff that's brewing at the Fretboard Journal. It's where the Fretboard Journal diehard readers can connect with each other and sell each other instruments. And we also have some really cool industry discounts. So it's a great way to support this podcast and all the other podcasts we do. For 2019, I am dying to move this podcast to a actual studio, and I think we can make that happen through efforts like this. What else is going on? For you guys wondering where the Fretboard Journal 43 is, thank you for your patience. It's going to be mailing out in about 5 days from the time I'm talking. So be looking for that right around Christmas time. And I think you will agree that it was worth the wait. We worked our asses off on this one, and it is a great issue. Billy Strings is in it, Molly Tuttle, George Loudon, and a lot of surprises. So Fretboardjournal.com is the place to go if you want to subscribe and get that. We will start you off with that issue if you order between now and, I think, December 19th. And I think you guys will absolutely love it. We have a few sponsors today, as always. Our first sponsor is, of course, Lee Valley. For years, Lee Valley has been providing tools for woodworkers around the world, and now they are in the world of guitar making in a big way. They have pretty much every luthery tool you could ask for if you were building a guitar. So go over to leevalley.com and see what they are all about. Our other sponsor is Retrofret Vintage Guitars. I love these guys. I love being able to sing their praises on the podcast for you guys. They have so many cool instruments. It is a cabinet of wonders of vintage fretted instruments over there. And they have a brand new showroom in the Carroll Gardens neighborhood of New York City. They've always had the most amazing but funkiest showroom ever in Brooklyn. And they moved to Carroll Gardens and it looks absolutely beautiful. And among other things, they have right now a Larson Brothers Prairie State Model 450 from 1931. They have a amazing 7-string Gibson Roy Smek that might have been actually ordered for Roy Smek himself. It's got this incredibly fat neck for Hawaiian playing. Looks incredible. They have a lot more as well, so go over to retrofret.com and rest assured they do amazing repair and restoration work as well if that is something that you need. Our last Fretboard Journal podcast sponsor for today is our friends over at Loudon Guitars. For four decades, George Loudon has been making some of the most exceptional acoustic guitars imaginable. He's got that new electric guitar I keep talking about, but he also has some truly, truly breathtaking limited edition 2018 acoustic models, including this. This wasn't on my radar, this limited edition series he's doing with Sitka Spruce Tops and Tiger Myrtle back and sides. I didn't know about Tiger Myrtle. It is an exceptionally beautiful tone wood, and I can only imagine how good it sounds. So go to loudonguitars.com, check those out. George is always up to interesting stuff, and he's actually, like I said, in the Fretboard Journal's 43rd issue, which is a very cool story. I cannot thank all of the Fretboard Journal podcast sponsors enough for underwriting this show and letting us do it for free every single week. If anyone out there works for a guitar company and wants to talk about to us about 2019 podcast advertising, reach out to me, jason@fretboardjournal.com. We would love to have you aboard. If you're listening to this podcast already, it means you have great taste, right? We have an amazing array of shows to close out 2018 for you. So subscribe to the podcast if you haven't yet. Like I said, Kenneth from the Milk Carton Kids, we've got Tommy Emmanuel and Jerry Douglas on this show week after that, on and on. I'm pulling out all the stops. We've done some incredible interviews, and I think you will dig them. And if you do dig them, check out that Fretboard Journal Insider program, because it definitely helps us out and helps us grow, which is something that is important to me for 2019 and beyond. All right, enough of my rambling for now. Here is Joey Landreth of the Brothers Landreth. Scott Crashen from the Fretboard Journal is doing the interview on this one. Until next time, everybody, thank you.
Joey, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Jason's out of town, so I'm going to take over, and we're going to do something a little different here. Joey, if you were not a musician, what would you do?
Oh, my God. Okay, here's ideally what I would do. I would wear a lot of flannel. I'd live in a house in a forest with no road.
Wait, don't you do that?
What's that?
Don't you do that currently?
Being a Canadian, yes, every Canadian by birthright owns a metric ton of flannel. Swings an axe, you know. No, we don't do that. That's what I would love to do. What I would actually do, I honestly don't know. Oh my God. I've often thought about this, and this is exactly the same conversation that happens in my head. Like, dude, if you lost an arm or your vocal cords or both arms or something else, what would you do? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's just make sure that doesn't happen. I think I've always been really fascinated with languages. I think I would go and study like linguistics or something. I don't know what that would be good for. And I don't have the money to go back to school. So maybe that's another...
We're dreaming here.
Let's dream big.
Yeah.
I want to get a Bachelor of Arts. No.
Oxford. You an Oxford man, Harvard man? Which, like, what are we?
I'm more of a community college kind of guy. Yeah. On my salary.
We're dreaming.
Okay, yeah. Send me to Oxford. I want to study Pig Latin at Oxford.
Awesome. Favorite tour activity, non-musical though. Not going to guitar stores.
Oh yeah. I really like coffee. I drink more coffee than I should. So I always like to try and source out the good coffee shop in town. I also really just like to explore, and there's often not a lot of time to do that. It's nice to just sort of get out and wander, and like, I mean, I travel so much for a living. That like, I'm not interested in touristy things. I just kind of like, I like to like, this sounds stupid, but like, I like to figure out where the cardinal points are. So where's north, where's, you know, east, west, and south. I like to know like what the neighborhoods are called. I don't know, you know, stuff like that. It's kind of like you get to go to a new place and I just want to see how people live there.
Yeah.
I really like that. I hardly get time to actually do it, but I did get to wander around a little bit around the hotel. We're staying at the Maxwell, which is a weird hotel.
Okay.
But it's nice. It's a nice hotel.
There's hopefully good coffee around it. We're in Seattle.
I didn't have a chance to wander around that much. There wasn't anything immediately close, but I got a bunch of recommendations yesterday. So,
favorite coffee city?
Well, you know, I'm biased, but one of my favorite coffee shops in the world so far is in Toronto. So I can't say Toronto's my favorite coffee city, but my favorite coffee shop is in Toronto, and it's called Neo Coffee Bar on Frederick Street, down by the waterfront. So, like right across from George Brown College. For Torontonians, go check it out. Tell them I sent you, or don't, because they don't know who I am. They don't give a shit. But have a cup of coffee there.
The start of that sounded like a song. Neo down by the river.
Yeah. Me and Neo drinking coffee by the riverside. Paul Simon, do something with that.
Yeah. So you're from Toronto.
I'm from Winnipeg.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let's go through your guitar progression. Who got you into it? Where'd you go from there?
My dad was the first person to put a guitar in my hand. Actually, yeah. My parents. So when I was like really, really little, this is actually kind of funny. My parents for Christmas gave me a tenor guitar, four string tenor guitar. And we're talking like 3 or 4 years old. And my hands were too small. I still have small hands. I mean, larger than my 3-year-old self did, but I couldn't. And this was actually interesting foreshadowing, but I couldn't actually really bear down on the string. So my dad gave me a slide, and I wore it on my pinky finger. And there's photos of me playing slide guitar, like probably sounded like hammered arse. But So there's photos of me like 4 or 5 years old playing slide guitar. But I was always really, really interested in the piano, and I took piano lessons, and that didn't really go well. So then I migrated back to the guitar around 8. My dad built me a guitar out of parts, a Telecaster, and that was it. I was really into Green Day and punk rock until I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan for the first time, and that was like... never heard anything like that, and to this day I've never heard anything like that, really. You know, somebody feel that much through an instrument, it still moves me an incredible amount. I don't listen to a ton of it, but it's still just mm-hmm. unbelievably moving.
Pops put you in lessons, and
he gave me my first handful of lessons, and my dad was a really massive advocate of learning yourself.
Yeah.
So I didn't end up taking my first guitar lesson until I was about 14 or 15, maybe a little bit younger than that, 13, 14, something like that. But, the first kind of thing that I learned was like a blues shuffle and a very dumbed down arrangement of a Johnny Cash tune. And then I wanted to learn These Arms of Mine, Otis Redding. And so my dad was like, well, let's figure it out. So he kind of showed me how to learn a song, which was interesting because he wrote out the lyrics first. And then we wrote out the lyrics, and then basically like the vocal phrasing was sort of dictated how we broke the tune down. Mm-hmm. Which was really interesting in hindsight, thinking about it, was a really interesting way to break down a tune, but makes sense. And so just went from there, and like, you know, learned a bunch of chords that I couldn't play and get my hands around, and just worked on it until I could. And I don't know. I think that was kind of the beginning of it. It was like, I watched him break down a song and kind of like, you know, fuss around trying to find the notes and figure out the voicings and stuff. And that was really, a massive part of my education, was that they're just seeing how to do it. And then from that point on, I was just always trying to learn stuff.
We know Mr. Landreth has good taste because he happens to be a Fretboard Journal subscriber.
Yes.
Joey's actually the second Landreth I've ever spoken to. Talk to Dad first. Everybody out there, dads love the Fretboard Journal. The holiday season's coming up. My turn for a plug. Neo Coffee got theirs.
Yep. Yes.
It's holiday season.
Fretboard Journal needs some love, you guys.
Are there any sons out there listening?
Or daughters.
Dads or daughters. Yes, yeah. Thank you, Jay. Dads love the Fretboard Journal. Dads get it for them. Themselves.
Dads love them.
Get it for them. Get it for yourself if you don't have it. Yes. Sorry. Mr. Landreth, thank you.
Thank you for the great service you've given the world.
What's his name?
Wally. Yeah.
Thanks, Wally.
Yep. Yeah, he's a good guy. He just had his 60th birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. I love you. Yeah. So that was a big thing for me. And then, I mean, like I broke apart all of Texas Flood as best I possibly could, which in hindsight was probably nowhere near as deep enough, but it was just like, you know, what I was capable of at the time. And I'd go back and relearn stuff and realize, like, you know, the difference between, like, this microphone's not plugged in, but like the difference between playing and playing, you know, it took me a few years in between those, but to realize, you know, all those crazy bends that he was doing, and wow, whatever, it was amazing. And I still learn a lot from it, but yeah. And then after that, the next thing that happened was I a friend of mine's mom bought me 10 lessons with this sort of local guitar wizard, and he taught me about the modes of the major scale. And and again, it was like, I've been really, really fortunate to have people who were not interested in maintaining their connection to my education, but giving me something that I could go away with. So it was like, here's a chunk of information that will give you access to so much other music if you sort of apply this, like, you know, you could take a scale and flip it around in a million different ways and you get all these different sounds out of one chunk of notes. And so, like, how does that apply to melodic minor, harmonic minor, Hungarian minor, whatever?
Yeah.
Or chord inversions. Like, you can do the same thing with chord inversions. And so it really just opened up my understanding of what music was doing. And so then I dove, I guess dove is actually not a word, dived. I dived deeper. I don't know. This is the guy who said he'd be a linguistic, doesn't know anything about words. Whatever. It was just a dream. Don't judge me. Yeah.
You jumped.
I jumped. I jumped. Yeah, let's use jumped. I know that works. I jumped into the pool and was submerged in musical information. Yeah, and I've just always been really, really interested in learning more. So that's, and to this day, I'm still really fascinated by music and always want more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start playing in bands?
Crazy enough, like the first actual band that I was ever in was the Brothers Landreth. I was always a sideman, and that was always what I wanted was like to play guitar for somebody sweet. And then I got the chance to do a fair amount of touring and with some higher profile like country acts at home in Canada, and it was really fun and really cool. Awesome way to travel around with a, you know, road manager and techs and a tour bus. And then, but I quickly kind of realized that I wanted more than just to play other people's music. And that was like, you know, I got to the point where I was like, it's good. I'm making okay money. I'm on the road a lot. I'm playing with great musicians, playing with great songwriters. But it's kind of not hitting me as hard as I thought it would. And I realized it was because it wasn't my own stuff. And so started writing with my brother. And that was like the first real band, you know, hop in the van and tour around. I did have like local bands. But again, like the Winnipeg scene was like, when I was coming up, there was like this sideman culture, at least the sort of the crowd that I was hanging with. So it was all players that played with people. And so it was like, that's what we aspired to. So I had a band actually with Meg Dolovich, my bass player now. The original drummer, well, the drummer from the Brothers Landreth, Ryan Voth, and this songwriter named Alexa Dirks, who goes by Begonia now. And she's unbelievable. So the four of us had a band with a bad band name called Little Boy Boom.
Oh God.
And we played like all like, weird, like funk and R&B covers. So it was like, you know, Prince and Jill Scott and weird stuff like that.
She's got some range. She can go there.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. She's unbelievable. And I mean, back then she was amazing, and she's a treasure now, man. Anyway, it was pretty fun. But that was our first band. But you know, and we wanted to make a go of it, but we didn't know what we were doing. So we just bounced from residency to residency around town, you know, making $50 a head kind of thing. But that was a great education too. That was a lot of fun. Learn how to deal with drunk people.
How long did it take that album to come together?
Which one?
The Let It Lie, the Bros.
Oh, letter. Yeah. That came together relatively quickly. Like, I think Dave and I started writing in the early part of 2012, and then we were in the studio. Oh man, maybe even earlier than that. I don't know. I'm messing up the timeline, but we basically, like, you know, my brother is the kind of guy that if you point him at something and say, hey, we should do this, he just figures it out and makes it happen. And so we had about 6 or 7 songs, and he was like, you want to make a record? I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's make a record. And I went off on tour and then came back, and he had, like, you know, booked a studio time and applied for grants. We get a lot of government subsidy at home, which is an absolute blessing. And so he had applied for all these grants, and we got approved for a couple. And, you know, it was like, actually, no, I'm lying. I don't think we got any grants for that record in the first part, because my aunt financed it. She loaned us the money to make the record at first. That's, yeah. So sorry, I'm screwing up the timeline.
It's a grant.
It's a grant. Yeah. It's an ant grant.
Ant grant.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so we just made it happen. And I think it was like, we started recording in the winter time. We went out to this guy, Don Benedictson's got a studio about an hour and a half outside Winnipeg in this beautiful little valley. And it was January. It was cold as hell. And we made this record, And then it was out by September of that year.
Anybody who hasn't heard it, go check it out. It's one of my favorite albums of the last decade.
Oh man, thank you. It was fun, man. We just like we recorded originally, the original pressing of it had 9 songs, because we had written 9 songs. That was it. And a couple of them sounded almost identical. They were just like, you know, kind of we'd written these songs in the same kind of headspace, the same, you know, guitar, the same tuning, the same room. So a lot of the songs kind of had a similar vibe. So we ended up having to like change them around a bunch. But I'm really proud of that record. We worked hard for that.
Yeah, we
toured hard.
Another album coming out soon?
Another album coming out at the end of next year.
Awesome. Yeah. End of next year?
Yeah, because I've got a solo record coming out in February. And we kind of want to let that thing do its thing before we release any more music from the Bros, because I think that's gonna require some energy. So
yeah,
we're kind of like, I know people are like, what do you mean fall of 2019? It's just gotta, you know, and we want to do it right. We want to make sure that people have their focus on it, and if we can't get out on the road and tour it right away, then
yep,
you know, so we want to wait. So sadly, yes, it's, but just for those who are interested, this is going to kill you. It's finished now. It's done. Sounds really good.
Joey's going to let me listen to it as soon as the microphones are off.
100%.
Yeah.
I'll give you a Dropbox link and everybody will know that you have it.
Yes.
All 13 people who want to hear it.
Yeah. You think there are 13 people listening to this?
Yes.
Okay. How many guitars does Joey Landreth own?
Oh my God. Probably 30 or 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many do you play regularly?
Right now I play, 3 or 4.
If you could only play one.
Oh man, I have such a hard time with that. Cause I like my dad, who's a great musician and also a guitar repairman. He laughs cause he's like, people ask him all the time, like, you know, what's Joe's favorite guitar? And he goes, whichever one he's playing. And that's true. Like, whatever the newest guitar is, that's my favorite. So this Gold Top right now is my world. But my Collings I-35 is very special. I've got a couple of great sirs. Josh Williams, you know Josh Williams?
No.
He's a builder out of California. It's, Temecula area. And I have one of his hollow bodies that's absolutely gorgeous, and he's just a beautiful human. I don't know if I could pick just one. If I had to pick one, like, it was just like, take this one instrument and the rest are going to burn. My dad made me a Tele when I was in high school. Not the first Tele that I had, but, and that's probably my prized possession, that guitar. And yeah, right now it doesn't play very well, and, it needs a lot of love. The strings are rusty and all cracked and stuff, but that's probably my prize
cool
instrument. But I don't know. I try to sneak the Gold Top in probably.
Who made that gold top?
A guy named Alex Sorokin.
Okay.
In Edmonton, Alberta. And he's a absolutely wonderful builder. And he's got a sort of normal job. He doesn't build for a living. He builds sort of just for the love of it. So like the amount of work that he puts into one instrument, like, I mean, we started talking about this guitar a year and a half before it was finished. And, you know, he slaves over the paint recipe. And, you know, his gold, I think, is the best out there, short of an actual vintage gold top. And he was telling me that he had gotten it so close, but it wasn't quite there. And then he found this article where some, like, industry magazine had interviewed the lady at the finishing shop. Just like, you know, kind of like, what's that show? Like Interesting Jobs or whatever. And somebody's like, so you paint guitars, what a crazy job. And walk us through your daily thing. And this is like 1951 or something, or 52. And she's like, well, you know, and she walks through her process. And he said at one point, there's one thing that she said, and she used the wrong, or not wrong, but it was like, nowadays we call it some component, we call it differently, but she broke down the order in which she does things. And he was like, that was what I was getting wrong. And then when I switched, and he just found this article, it was like an article clipping. And so like, so he's just like the geekiest of all geeks. And, but when he fixed that, then all of a sudden his paint was like perfect. So yeah, things like that. The pickups were wound on the same machine that the original, that this is based off of 54 that I played at Carter, and the pickups were wound, we believe, you know, it's hard to say exactly, but from Throwback, they have all those Kalamazoo winders.
Yeah.
And these pickups were wound on the, what we believe to be the same machine that wound the pickups on the guitar that I've played at first.
Sweet.
Yeah. So this guitar has just got an incredible amount of mojo. And we were talking about old guitars, how they vary from like being absolutely magical to being complete dogs. You know, you could pick up a $250,000 guitar and it's just like, I've played better standard Les Pauls off the wall at Guitar Center.
Yeah.
This guitar has everything, all the good qualities in an old guitar that I've been able to play, and sort of none of the bad qualities. So I just love this instrument.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
We'll take some pictures of it.
Dope.
Contemporary peers who are pushing you, you're listening to a bunch and just love what they're doing.
Oh man. Well, I don't know if I could lump myself in and be a contemporary, but, I listen to a lot of Theo Katzman, Emily King. I don't listen to a lot of guitar players, not a ton. I'm listening to a lot of songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of going through what I'm listening to at the moment. Those guys, Theo Katzman, Emily King, really, really excite me in terms of like what they're creating and how they're creating it. Really, really, really inspired by them. What else? Oh man, Anderson .Paak's record is really, really awesome. He's not a contemporary. He's like, he's on another planet, but
yeah,
his new record is unbelievable. Yeah, I don't know. I listen to a lot of podcasts. it's like kind of the cruel byproduct of playing so much music for a living is that by the time I get done touring or playing a show, like I don't have a lot of room left in my brain to totally. Receive music. But totally. Something that I found was Keith Jarrett put out a record in 1988, and he goes through the book one of the Well-Tempered Clavier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all those Bach preludes. Yeah. And fugues and stuff. And oh my God, it's a treasure. So go check that out. But again, not a contemporary, mutant from another planet, but it's just beautiful music that sort of fills me up.
So you have an amazing voice, not, you know, as well as being a hell of a guitar player. When did that, when did you discover that? And does that almost drive you more these days since the guitar has been in your hands since you were three, or does the guitar still drive everything you're doing?
It's, I don't know. In my mind, when I see myself, I see myself as a guitar player for sure. But I've always sung. I've always been a singer. I was in the early days, I was too shy. I didn't start really singing in front of people until I was in like the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first time that I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it. I sang Little Wing at a, And then it was like, I mean, I knew that I could sing, but I didn't really think anything.
Which
of
Little
it.
Wayne song? Sorry, I have
no,
to
no,
ask.
Little Wing.
Oh, sorry,
Little Wayne.
They said Little Wayne.
I wish. No, that's that my, that's
little,
my
Little Wing makes a little more sense.
It makes a little more sense. Yeah, yeah. It was my Canadian accent. That'd be awesome. She was a villain, Vanilla Ice song.
It was eighth grade. Ice I guess Baby. Little Wayne wasn't even. He's not even there. Okay.
Probably not. No.
Moving on.
Not in 1999 or whatever. Or who knows? I don't know what Little Wayne was doing in 99. Yeah. No. It was Little Wing. And yeah. It. I just like. I knew that I could sing, but it wasn't really like the forefront of it. Of I wasn't like dreaming of necessarily being a singer, or maybe I was. I don't know. I think I'm just bullshitting. But yeah, I don't know. And I've just like in the last handful of years, I've sort of turned my attention over to my voice and working on it. And you know, I see a vocal coach and all that stuff. And I practice when I'm, you know, when I have the time, when I'm off the road, I practice very much the same way I practice the guitar. Exercises and scales and ideas and, you know, stuff like that. Transcribe stuff. I learn other people's stuff. And so, yeah, definitely work at it. I think it's a funny thing that a lot of people maybe don't, or they don't see what they're doing as work, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, just cause I'm like, I spend so much time making music that a lot of times in my downtime, I tend to gravitate towards other stuff. So in order to make sure that I put in time on my instrument, I actually will sit down and practice, you know.
Troy, thanks so much.
Such a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.